Iran calling for the unfreezing of Afghanistan's financial assets to help the quaking country that's in urgent need of humanitarian aid. Russian President Vladimir Putin calls for cooperation among the BRICS nations to counter what it calls the West's selfish actions. And the British economy is showing signs of stalling as the highest inflation in 40 years affects consumer confidence. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. In Afghanistan, the disaster management authorities say that search and rescue operations are going on in some far-flung areas in the aftermath of a devastating earthquake. 90% of rescue efforts are completed in the critical regions, but the teams are still searching some hard-to-reach areas. Heavy rains and rockfalls have hampered relief efforts in some areas. The quake killed at least 1,000 people. 1,500 others were also injured. Over 3,000 homes have been destroyed. A number of countries, including Iran, have offered emergency aid. Two humanitarian flights from Iran have landed in Afghanistan. The UN Food Agency says that Afghanistan is already facing an unprecedented crisis, and the earthquake will only add to the dire humanitarian needs. The 6.1 magnitude earthquake shook eastern regions of the country on Wednesday. Paktika province was the hardest hit. Meantime, Iran is again calling for the unfreezing of Afghan assets as the country is reeling from a powerful earthquake. Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations says the release of the blocked assets is crucial to help the Afghan economy and save lives. Ajit Aftabanji added that the unfreezing of such assets should not be politicized nor made conditional in any way. He made a comment in a UN Security Council session on the situation in Afghanistan. The diplomat also said that UN sanctions imposed on certain Afghan individuals must not impede humanitarian, economic, or developmental collaboration with Afghanistan. The United States has frozen around $7 billion of Afghan funds. Tawab Zafarzai is a freelance journalist who joined us from Kabul a short time ago, and he explains why the quake in Afghanistan has caused so many casualties.
It is one of the biggest disasters that happened since long years, because Afghanistan is not prone to earthquakes. So this is one of the biggest earthquakes. And as it happened during night time, that everybody was at home and sleeping. So that's why it causes more damage. And the recent rains that since last 3 or 4 days, it's pouring heavy rains. And due to that, plus the other factor is that most of the homes outside the big cities in Afghanistan are made of mud. That's why it causes more damages.
Iran's foreign ministry says that Tehran and Moscow are working on an agreement for long-term and comprehensive cooperation.
We also discussed the treaty for comprehensive strategic and long-term cooperation between the two states, and this has been on our agenda prior to the trip by President Raisi to Russia. We hope to hold experts meeting very soon in order to finalize the contents of the agreement and also other matters on the agenda.
Amir Abdullah made a comment in a joint presser with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov in Tehran. Said the two countries are looking to expand bilateral trade and boost cooperation in different sectors, including railway transit. The top diplomat also commented on the war in Ukraine and said that the U.S. is using NATO to implement its own agenda. The minister said that Tehran believes a diplomatic approach is the only way to resolve the conflict. On the JCPO revival talks, Amir Abdullahian said Tehran is hoping that Washington will take a realistic approach and remove the sanctions to pave the way for a final agreement. Then Lavrov said that Moscow fully supports the restoration of the JCPOA without any unacceptable additions.
We once again confirm to our Iranian friends that we will fully support their position about the revival of Iran's 2015 nuclear deal with no exceptions and unacceptable additions. This implies cancellation of all the illegal sanctions.
Lavrov said that all illegal anti-Iran sanctions that contradict JCPOA must be lifted. The Russian top diplomat said that Moscow and Tehran condemn what are called unacceptable practice of illegal unilateral sanctions imposed by Washington and its allies. He said the two countries are working to counter such measures. Moscow and Tehran both reject the concept of the so-called rule-based order prompted by Western powers. Lavrov also said that Russia and Iran have been collaborating to stabilize oil and gas markets. He stressed there is full agreement within the OPEC Plus on the need to protect Iran's interests in its activities. A political commentator, Robert Fantina, believes that a stronger relations between Iran and Russia will cause a setback for the U.S. in pursuing its hegemonic policies.
As countries such as Iran and Russia and China and others, Venezuela, others that you've mentioned, enhance their alliances and work together cooperatively on items such as economic ties, defense, and other areas, cultural associations and so on, this indicates that the United States is no longer the world's self-appointed policeman, and that it can no longer do exactly as it chooses because there are other powerful nations and powerful alliances that will challenge it and will prevent it from doing those things. So these new or enhanced agreements between Iran and Russia are very important and very strong and will help to maintain peace in the world, something the U.S. has no interest in.
The numerous acts of sabotage that Israel has committed against Iran, from assassinating its nuclear scientists to damaging its nuclear facilities, are an open secret. But Tehran is saying that Tel Aviv's covert operations have weakened in the face of its security apparatus. The judiciary has revealed the arrest of three Mossad-linked agents who had the intention of killing Iranian nuclear scientists.
Iran has released fresh details about the covert and planned operations of agents of Israeli spy agency in Iran. Officials say the three agents detained back in April were planning to assassinate Iranian nuclear scientists. Officials say the agents were arrested following a complicated intelligence operation that lasted 8 months. Judiciary officials say some members of the cell have been arrested in Iran's southeastern Sistan and Balochistan province, while other members and operatives have been detained outside the province by Iran's intelligence forces. Officials say the case is under preliminary investigation and that an indictment would be filed and sent to court soon. This is not the first time Iran busts Mossad-linked terrorists. In July last year, Iran's intelligence ministry arrested a network of agents with the Israeli Mossad spy agency at the western borders, confiscating a large cache of weapons and ammunition that they were planning to use to provoke riots and terror inside the country.
Well, of course there should be, and I don't think anyone is really going to seriously say it's unthinkable that Israel would try to assassinate Iranian figures, whether in science or politics. They've got a demonstrable propensity to do so, and they boast about it.
The arrests come amid open threats by Israeli officials against Iranian nuclear scientists and facilities. The regime is notorious for its sabotage activities and assassinations in Iran.
And the reason behind its stepped-up hostility toward Iran and a very open hostility, is that Israel seeks to be the lone superpower, or you could say mini superpower of the region, as a junior partner of the big superpower, the United States.
Well, Israel has been trying to halt Iran's civilian nuclear program throughout the years, but it's been unsuccessful. Those efforts include influencing IAEA reports by providing it with false information about Iran's nuclear activities. Still, the failure of the international community in holding Tel Aviv to account has emboldened the regime to pursue its plots of assassination and sabotage.
Israel has tried various ways to stop Iran's nuclear progress. They include acts of sabotage, assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists, as well as threats to bomb Iran's nuclear installations. Probably the most high-profile assassination was the killing of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, a top Iranian nuclear scientist who was brutally murdered by Mossad agents in 2020. Mossad was involved in an explosion that hit Iran's Natanz nuclear facility in 2021. Israel was also the main regional force that pushed the United States to exert economic and diplomatic pressure on Iran. The policy culminated in the so-called maximum pressure campaign of former President Donald Trump. But none of those policies reached their stated goals. Iran's economy did not collapse, and its nuclear program has accelerated massively after the U.S. quit the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, in 2018.
It's the whole establishment, the whole Israeli establishment, that has this extreme hostility toward Iran and wants to continue to take action in the hopes of provoking something greater. It carries out assassinations, there's no question about that. It carries out bombings inside the country, carried out by covert agents. I think right now the United States government is not wishing to see an escalation into a full-blown war. And Israel does, in the final analysis, have to pay attention to what Washington thinks and says.
Just recently, a top U.S. think tank admitted to Israel's failure towards Iran. A report by Atlantic Council said that Israel's policy has failed to stop Iran. The article said the Tel Aviv regime needs to recalculate and adopt a strategy that corresponds to the current state of the Iranian nuclear program. Given the current state of affairs, the United States, which is Israel's staunch ally, needs to reconsider its unilateral support for Israel.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has urged the leaders of BRICS countries to rise to their responsibilities and stand up against abuse of international sanctions. Addressing an online meeting of the bloc, the Chinese leader said that the BRICS nations should abandon group confrontation and oppose unilateral sanctions. He said the bloc must act to inject positive, stable, and constructive forces into the world. Speaking to the same online forum, President Putin of Russia called on the bloc to cooperate in the face of, quote, selfish actions of the West. He said that Moscow is ready to further develop collaboration with the bloc. The BRICS countries comprise Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. According to an industry watchdog survey, British economy is showing signs of stalling as high inflation is threatening a recession there. The S&P Global's Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, shows British firms have been hit by a slowdown in new orders. Business confidence has also fallen to its weakest since last year. UK's private sector firms say demand has been hit by purchase hesitancy and squeezed budgets due to high inflation. June's PMI figures didn't change, showing the slowest economic growth rate in the year. Meantime, Britain's paying higher living costs and fuel prices as national inflation climbs to 9.1%, and that's the highest it's been in the past 40 years. The European Parliament has voted to grant Ukraine immediate candidate status against the backdrop of efforts by Kyiv to become a member of the EU. With nearly 530 votes in favor and 45 opposed, the Parliament adopted the resolution in favor of the candidacy status. That's the first step for Kyiv toward joining the 27-member trade union. Ukraine is now facing a complicated process of reforms that could take decades to complete before it actually becomes an official member. The move is symbolic of the EU's support for Ukraine and its face-off with Russia. President Putin has already made it clear his country has nothing against Ukraine joining the EU because it's an economic alliance, not a military one. However, Russia is adamantly opposed to Ukraine becoming a NATO member. Washington says it's sending a new batch of military assistance to Kyiv to help it fight Russia.
United States announced another additional $450 million worth of security assistance to Ukraine as part of our commitment to help Ukraine defend its democracy in the face of unprovoked Russian aggression. This package contains weapons and equipment, including new high-mobility artillery rocket systems, tens of thousands of additional rounds of ammunition for the artillery systems that have already been provided as well, and patrol boats to help Ukraine defend its coast and its waterways.
Well, Kirby says the latest military aid would push the U.S. contribution to Ukraine to more than $6 billion. Washington has already delivered four rocket systems that have been at the top of Ukraine's wish list. The White House is planning to send four additional rocket launchers as part of the new military aid. But Ukrainian soldiers lack training to operate the sophisticated weaponry. The new U.S. assistance comes as Russian forces continue to advance through eastern Ukraine with the help of its advanced artillery. And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight. Britain's cost of living crisis is being made worse by Brexit dragging down the country's growth potential and costing workers hundreds of pounds a year in lost pay. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's economics correspondent Richard Partington. The piece is titled "Brexit is making cost of living crisis worse," new study claims. Britain's cost of living crisis is being made worse by Brexit, dragging down the country's growth potential and costing British workers hundreds of pounds a year in lost pay, according to new research. The Resolution Foundation think tank and academics from the London School of Economics have said the average worker in Britain was now on course to suffer more than £470 in lost pay each year by 2030, after rising living costs are taken into account compared with a Remain vote in 2016. In a report 6 years on from the referendum, the researcher said Brexit was damaging the competitiveness of United Kingdom exports on the world stage, just as companies are forced to deal with the fallout from the coronavirus pandemic and Russia's conflict with Ukraine, pushing inflation to historic levels. A less open Great Britain is expected to be poorer and less productive, the new research claimed. Official figures due on Wednesday are expected to show a fresh rise in the inflation rate from 9% in April to 9.1% last month, as surging petrol prices and the rising cost of a weekly shop ramps up the pressure on struggling families. The Bank of England has warned the inflation rate could reach as high as 11% by October. As the government attempted to face down rail unions on Tuesday, 21st of June, amid the most widespread train strike since the 1980s, ministers were forced to defend inflation-busting increases planned for the state pension, while ordering pay restraint for workers in the public sector. The former Conservative Chancellor, Ken Clark, said Britain was in the grip of the worst economic crisis since at least 1979, telling the BBC that a recession was almost inevitable. Kenneth Clark said, "We are, I think, almost certainly going to go into recession in the next couple of years. The Bank of England has had to start tackling inflation, which has been allowed to get completely out of hand." Prime Minister Boris Johnson has warned workers against asking for bigger pay rises to prevent a 1970s-style wage price spiral, driving inflation higher, in sharp contrast to October of last year, when the Prime Minister suggested Brexit could help create a high-wage, high-productivity economy of the future. However, the new report from the Resolution Foundation and the London School of Economics said Brexit would weigh heavily on productivity gains over the coming years up to 2030, while suggesting that higher import costs were adding to pain for household finances. The new research estimated labour productivity, a key measure of economic output per hour of work, could be reduced by as much as 1.3% by 2030 because of a decline in openness of the British economy after Brexit, equivalent to losing a quarter of efficiency gains achieved over the past decade. Ministers have argued bigger pay rises for British workers would only be sustainable if backed by productivity gains. However, with the expected decline in the efficiency of the British economy after Brexit, the academics said inflation-adjusted pay was now set for a 1.8% fall by 2030. It said this was equivalent to the loss of £472 for a worker in a year. The report's authors included the London School of Economic Academics Swati Dhingra, an outspoken Brexit critic picked by the Chancellor Rishi Sunak to sit on the Bank of England's Interest Rate Setting Monetary Policy Committee from August. The report appeared to undermine the government's argument that Brexit and its plans to level up the economy to boost prosperity outside of London and the South East, with researchers finding the northeast of England would be hardest hit by leaving the European Union. With a bigger industrial sector and higher exposure to the European Union market, it said the region would see a 2.7% fall in manufacturing output by 2030. Compared with a scenario in which the United Kingdom voted to remain in the European Union in 2016. Although the report found that exports to the European Union had not been as heavily hit by Brexit under the terms of Boris Johnson's trade deal with Brussels since the start of last year, it nonetheless warned overall that Britain would become less open and less competitive. Exports to the European Union are expected to be 38% lower than they would have been inside the European Union by 2030, with a further 16% decline due to foregone further integration with the European Union over that period. Torsten Bell, the chief executive of the Resolution Foundation, said Brexit would make recovering from the COVID pandemic and getting wages to rise sustainably after the cost of living crisis more difficult. Torsten Bell said, 10% inflation is painful, whether you drive a train, commute by train, or have nothing to do with trains. It would always have been hard to cope with, but it is far more so for families coming on the back of 15 years of stagnant wages. The sustainable route out of this is stronger, productivity-led wage growth. COVID-19 and Brexit don't make that any easier to achieve. But Britain has considerable economic strength, and we urgently need a renewed economic strategy that builds on them.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to a brand new episode of Muslim Lady here on IRIB English Radio. Thank you so very much for joining us on this wonderful day or night, whatever time of the day it is at your corner of the world. Here in the studio, I have the honor and pleasure of being joined by my wonderful sister and special guest, Sister Razia Shamli. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My dear Sister Zainab, honored to be here. And inshallah, hoping to have a fruitful discussion today.
As we explained in previous episodes, we can't imagine such people cohabitating, quote unquote, with the opposite gender without an Islamic contract that would make it lawful for them. What are we gonna explore about this topic today?
So one dimension that we didn't really talk about and shed much light on was parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in this scenario. I was watching a YouTube video today, and this lady, this researcher, was sharing the result of the paper that she and a co-author had done on what happens to a relationship in the two cases of cohabitation and marriage when a child enters that
picture,
right?
Yep.
And she was saying that 1/4 of cases in cohabiting couples actually break up after the child enters. Imagine how much complexity comes in the picture.
Yeah.
The second generation of homosexuals, God knows, in the second generation of, you know, what happens to the mindset of this child, what happens to the psychological
Don't worry about that at all. Yeah, maybe this child will be a little messed up, that specific child of that.
It will be messed up for good.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, at
some point, humanity is going to restart itself. Don't worry about that. And that's totally fine.
This is the point of this discussion, that there is no end to the changes and to the needs and to the new ways of life that we're making for ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? And these are just instances that if you let loose your own desires and your own wisdom, your own intellect, this is where it's going to lead you.
Mm.
Whereas if you come back to this path of religion where it lays everything straightforward for you, you have one family, you have certain commitments, certain legal and certain ethical commitments towards each other. Everything is clear cut. Life is made so much more simple for you this way. This is what I'm saying. This lady that I'm following on Instagram, she's in Sweden, and she was saying that a couple of days ago, my colleague was absent for, I think, maybe like a month or so. And then he came back and he said, I'm a dad now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, how come you're a dad? I haven't, you know, like, you haven't said anything. And he's like, they were homosexuals. Mm-hmm. He was gay.
Yeah.
He said, we have gone to another country. We had
adopted
a surrogate mother.
Uh-huh.
Taken our child. Mm-hmm. And she has given birth to our child, to our son. Mm-hmm. And now Bill and Jack, mm-hmm. We have our son with us. This homosexuality becoming legal and them having the right to have a family, to raise children, this is a new phenomenon. It's in the past decade. They've been homosexuals, but they've been illegal. They haven't had the chance to get married officially. Even some branches of Christianity have recognized them as couples, as married couples.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that the next 20, 30, 40 years will be faced with a generation, the world, that there are no set of values. Anything that you think is good, let's not judge people. Yeah. And I have a lot of problem with this issue that let's not judge people. Yeah, yeah. Let's not judge people. And there's this verse in the Quran that do not have bad suspicion on about people, because a lot of your suspicions will turn out, they will be sins, because what you're thinking about other people might not be true. And it's just what's going on in your mind. Yeah. Yep. Let's not judge people when you don't have complete evidence. But sometimes what's going on in the world is really, if you can't judge, then you will be just so confused. Mm. We should have our set of values. We should know where we're heading.
Absolutely.
So,
there's a difference between, I feel, judging and deciding whether what someone is doing is against my set of values or not. You know, because at the end of the day, well, it's your life. They're obviously not going to put you and I in the same grave. But
then again, you're
but
not
then again,
put...
it's like the most I can do in regard to another person's actions is not committed myself, right? If it's a random homosexual person in Western Europe, أمر بالمعروف ونهي عن المنكر, enjoining the good and forbidding the bad means
nothing,
right? Means jack to them, that obligatory law.
You know what, Zainab? The best form of أمر بالمعروف these days is to be a practical role model yourself.
Yeah.
To be a practical example, not even a role model, because they don't even want you to be the role model.
Exactly.
To just
a good person.
Exhibit, show, display one form, one norm of life where they can see that within the confinements of this sort of family or this sort of union, things happen more fluidly. And you know what? It's not just today or tomorrow, next year, 10 years of me and you. It's the next generations to come. And we are not, I think we are being very simplistic to just see the current situation of, you know, events. We should be a little more farsighted and think about what would happen to the children of my children, to the children of my children. What would happen to their mindset?
Oh, they'll be fine.
I don't think so.
I have so much faith.
Unless humanity is restarted.
It will be. That's why I have so much faith. They'll be fine.
In that
because
case, I agree with you.
Everything's going to be fine.
We're in the same boat.
Because humanity does that every once in a while. It deviates a whole lot. And then stuff hits the fan. Everything is officially gone south. And there's no redeeming it itself anymore. And things are just going to get worse and worse and darker. And that's when...
Yeah, this beautiful verse in the Quran that says, فَأَقِمْ وَجْهَكَ لِلدِّينَ حَنِيفًا فِطْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَطَرَ النَّاسَ عَلَيْهَا لَا تَبْدِيلَ لِخَلْقِ اللَّهِ This is exactly what we're talking about. ذَلِكَ الدِّينُ الْقَيِّمُ وَلَكِنْ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسِ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ Which means, so set your heart as a person of pure faith on this religion, the original nature endowed by Allah according to which He originated mankind. There is no altering Allah's creation. Yep. That is the upright religion. But most people do not know.
Do not know, exactly. I'm not necessarily saying that there's going to be a great flood. I mean, who am I to say anything? But humanity will restart itself. There will be some sort of revolutionary movement again. And everything's going to be fine. That I'm not worried about at all. I'm just, I'm mostly just worried about the now, you know, and the confusion that such arrangements create among people, number one. Number two, the effort we need to exert and the time and energy we need to spend in order to debunk this approach to life.
It's not like, okay, at one point in life, everything's we're going to figure out, oh, we made a mistake, let's all go back. It's not going to be like that. There's going to be a big natural disaster coming where people and families and the whole universe will just be shattered into pieces. And then Allah says, he just shakes the tissue where, you know, the planet that we're living on. And then the new system, a new planet, you know.
New population.
Everything will be starting from afresh.
This is what I think will happen.
Of course, what I just explained is the description of Qiyamah. But then we're talking about a second chance to live, which will come after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala. And then where it's you, the scenario that you explained, where people are so, even the Muslims are so deviated that when he comes, they're going to say, oh my God, he's bringing something else. The Islam that he is talking about, it's not what we have known.
Yeah.
And he's bringing a new religion. So that's when there's going to be a lot of wars going on in the world. And a lot of people actually, without resisting, they would just accept the Islam that he introduces from far in the East and the West, right? Mm-hmm. Without even, you know, without any bloodshed, because it's fitra, it's within their nature, what he's bringing to people.
We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Another possibility could be that people are just going to get fed up with it. You know, because we can pretend to be something against what we truly are for so long, you know? And because the nafs is such a tricky little element in our existence, and the devil, these two things we really shouldn't underestimate. Like, seriously, these they're so tricky and they're so deceiving. But they can only trick us for a while, you know. That at the end of the day, that part of God that's been entrusted within us. The part where he says in the Quran, نَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي, I blew a part of my soul into this clay figure in order to give it life. That part is going to grow so restless after a while. And it's going to try to struggle so hard to break free that people and societies and communities and maybe these few next generations that we're so worried about, they're going to be so fed up with all this nonsense. They're going to be like, enough is enough.
They're going to be the pioneers of going to the Deen of Hanif.
Exactly. And they could be the ones who create the groundwork for the reappearance of Sahib al-Zaman. That's why I have so much faith in them, you know, because a lot of narrations point to the fact that drawing close to the reappearance of Al-Hujjah alayhi salam, the human logic and intellect is going to be so developed that it's going to be like, well, we're going to follow Imam Zaman. What else are we going to do? It only makes sense. Because they've seen what a horrible, horrible place the world could have been when it was just left to the whim of mere mortals. And they're going to be like, you know what? I think I'm going to give this whole God thing a try. And society will just gradually develop. I mean, God knows what he's doing, obviously. And we're all out of time. Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of Muslim Lady. Until another salam and greeting, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah, Muhammad. The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah,
Muhammad is the messenger, Allah is our return. The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack directly tied Donald J. Trump on Tuesday, 21st of June, to a scheme to put forward fake slates of pro-Trump electors and presented fresh details on how the former president sought to bully, cajole, and bluff his way into invalidating his 2020 defeat in states around the country. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Luke Broadwater and Alan Feuer. The piece is titled, Panel Ties Trump to Fake Electoral Plan, Mapping His Attack on Democracy. In the U.S., the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack directly tied Donald J. Trump on Tuesday, 21st of June, to a scheme to put forward fake slates of pro-Trump electors and presented fresh details on how the former president sought to bully, cajole, and bluff his way into invalidating his 2020 defeat in states around the country. using sworn in-person testimony from Republicans and videotaped depositions from other officials, the House panel showed how the former president and a group of his allies laid siege to state lawmakers and election officials after the balloting in a wide-ranging plot to reverse the outcome of the election. The campaign led to harassment and threats of violence against anyone who resisted. The hearing on Tuesday, 21st of June, amounted to the most comprehensive picture to date of a president who directed an attack on democracy itself and repeatedly reached into its essential machinery, the administration of free and fair elections. It was the committee's fourth hearing, and it captured how, long before a throng of his supporters stormed the Capitol on 6th of January 2021, Donald Trump used election lies to whip up violence against anyone who dared deny his false claims of victory. The president's lie was and is a dangerous cancer on the body politic, said Representative Adam Schiff, the California Democrat who led the questioning on Tuesday. If you can convince Americans they cannot trust their own elections, that any time they lose is somehow illegitimate, then what is left but violence to determine who should govern? Over nearly 3 hours, the House committee demonstrated how Donald Trump and his supporters, including his personal lawyer, Rudolph Giuliani, and his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, sought to persuade state officials to avoid certifying vote counts to give Donald Trump a victory in the Electoral College. Donald Trump also sought to persuade lawmakers to create the slates of alternate electors, hoping that Vice President Mike Pence might use them to subvert the normal democratic process when he oversaw the official count of electoral votes on 6th of January 2021. And the panel presented evidence tying Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona and Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin to the plan. House committee offered testimony from four public servants who stood up to the former president, rejecting his increasingly desperate pleas for help, often at great personal expense. "I didn't want to be used as a pawn," Rusty Bowers, the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, testified. Rusty Bowers, a Republican, told the committee that he rebuffed Donald Trump's attempts to get him to create slates of pro-Trump electors in his state, Arizona, explaining to the former president, "You are asking me to do something against my oath, and I will not break my oath." Such defiance, however, came at a cost. Rusty Bowers told the committee that after bucking Donald Trump, a truck was driven through his neighborhood, playing a recording that declared him to be a pedophile. Mr. Bowers, who spoke about the Constitution in reverential and spiritual terms, had tears in his eyes as he described his gravely ill daughter enduring some of the harassment outside their house. Her daughter died last year. In similar fashion, Brad Raffensperger, Georgia Secretary of State, testified that after he turned down Donald Trump's request in a phone call to find the votes that would throw him the election, his wife of 40 years received threats by text and people broke into their daughter-in-law's house. "It's turned my life upside down." Wondria Moss, a Georgia election worker who was implicated by name in one of Donald Trump's false election fraud allegations, said in her own emotional testimony. Wondria Moss, who is known as Shay, added, "It's affected my life in a major way, in every way, all because of lies." And the panel contrasted the willingness of the four officials to speak out with the refusal of many of Donald Trump's allies and others around him to tell investigators what they know. In particular, Representative Liz Cheney, a Republican of Wyoming, and the panel's vice chairwoman, singled out Pat Cipollone, Donald Trump's White House counsel who repeatedly pushed back on his efforts to overturn the election. Our committee is certain that Donald Trump does not want Mr. Cipollone to testify here, Liz Cheney said. But we think the American people deserve to hear from Mr. Cipollone personally. He should appear before this House committee, and we're working to secure his testimony. The plan to enlist the help of state lawmakers to create fake slates of electors appears to have begun just days after the election, when a pro-Trump lawyer, Cleta Mitchell, sent an email suggesting the idea to John Eastman, another lawyer close to Donald Trump. A movement is stirring, Ms. Mitchell wrote in the email, introduced as evidence at the hearing, but needs constitutional support. By 18th of November 2020, the committee said another pro-Trump lawyer, Kenneth Chesbrough, had joined the effort, writing a memo suggesting that the Trump campaign should organize its allies in several swing states to draft fake slates of electors. Around Thanksgiving, still others signed onto the plan, including Rudolph Giuliani and Mark Meadows, according to a recorded deposition from Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to Mark Meadows. Eventually, the Republican National Committee, the RNC, was brought in as well. Ronna McDaniel, the group's chairwoman, said in a recorded deposition played at the hearing. Ronna McDaniel testified that during a call with Donald Trump, he put John Eastman on the phone with her to talk about the importance of the Republican National Committee helping the campaign gather these contingent electors. All of this was allowed to go forward despite the fact that several lawyers for the Trump campaign felt it was illegal. The White House counsel's office said as much during a meeting with Mark Meadows and Rudolph Giuliani, according to Ms. Hutchinson. And even those pushing the scheme conceded it was groundless. "We've got lots of theories," Rusty Boas recalled Mr. Giuliani saying at a meeting with Arizona legislators. "We just don't have the evidence." On another occasion, as Rusty Boas questioned John Eastman about how there could possibly be a legal way for him to simply name new electors, the lawyer had no answer, replying, "Just do it and let the courts work it out." Even after Arizona had certified its electors, John Eastman and Andy Biggs called Rusty Boas, pushing him to launch a fresh attempt to decertify the vote after the fact. Brad Raffensperger and Gabrielle Sterling, Georgia's top two election officials, recounted a similar story. Pressure from Donald Trump to overturn the election that ultimately led to threats and intimidation when they pushed back. Mr. Raffensperger was on a call with Donald Trump on 3rd of January 2021, during which Donald Trump pushed him to find enough votes to overturn the outcome of the election and vaguely threatened him with a criminal offense. Gabrielle Sterling is perhaps best known for having given an impassioned speech on 1st of December 2020 in which he addressed Donald Trump directly, telling him that his lies about the election were leading to violence against election workers. "It has all gone too far, all of it," Gabrielle Sterling said in a speech that was played at the hearing. He added, "It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language." Shortly after the election, Donald Trump and his allies seized on conspiracy theories, falsely claiming that election workers in Atlanta, Georgia, had been caught on video quietly taking thousands of ballots from a suitcase and feeding them into counting machines. Even though the allegations were quickly investigated and debunked, Gabrielle Sterling said Donald Trump and his lawyers continue to push the claims in public and on social media sites. Fighting back against this flood of misinformation, Gabrielle Sterling says, was like a shovel trying to empty the ocean. The committee showed the breathtaking sweep of the pressure campaign across 7 states, playing clips from officials in Michigan and Pennsylvania who were inundated with thousands of text messages, phone calls, protesters near their homes, and threats. At one point, Brian Cutler, the Republican House Speaker in Pennsylvania, asked Donald Trump's legal team to stop its daily phone calls to him because they were inappropriate. The plan found eager allies in Congress, however. The committee showed texts that an aide to Ron Johnson had sent to an aide to Mike Pence, indicating that Mr. Johnson wanted to hand-deliver a slate of fake electors from Wisconsin to the vice president on 6th of January. Mike Pence's aide responded, "Do not give that to him." A spokesman for Ron Johnson on Tuesday blamed the exchange on his chief of staff, saying that the senator had no involvement in creating an alternate set of electors. The hearing ended with testimony from Ms. Moss, an election worker who processed votes with her mother, Ruby Freeman, in Atlanta, Georgia, on Election Day. In early December, Rudolph Giuliani appeared at a state legislative hearing in Georgia and falsely accused her and her mother of taking ballots from a suitcase and illegally running them through voting machines. Mr. Giuliani's baseless allegations were amplified by right-wing media outlets and by Donald Trump himself, who mentioned Ms. Moss's name several times during his call with Brad Raffensperger. After the accusations went viral, Ms. Moss was subjected to racist threats by phone and text and became afraid to leave her home. She told the committee that her mother fled her home after the FBI warned her that she could be in danger. Ms. Moss also recalled a panicked phone call from her septuagenarian grandmother, who said people had arrived at her home seeking to make a citizen's arrest of Ms. Moss.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.